Good evening, everyone. I'm Lynn Ahmadu. Welcome to Health Chat. Non-communicable diseases such as cancer and diabetes are now the leading cause of death in most regions of the world. The World Health Organization says 16 million NCDs death, NCDs meaning non-communicable diseases, the death occur before the age of 70, and 82% of these premature deaths occurred in low and middle income countries. Globally, unhealthy diets and insufficient physical activity contribute to about 12 million non-communicable diseases deaths annually. Africa is expected to have the world's largest increase in NCD death over the next decade. Observers say rapid unplanned urbanization and unhealthy diets have been cited as some of the reasons for the increase of non-communicable diseases in the Africa region. We will look at nutrition, urbanization, and how to address nutrition and live better, eat healthier. Joining us in the studio for more on the subject is Tambra Ray Stevenson, founder and CEO of WANDA, Women Advancing Nutrition, Dietetics, and Agriculture. Tambra, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And we will have our discussion in a moment on nutrition and looking at African food and some of the things that we eat. But first, the staple grain of Ethiopia, teff, is sprouting across America as it is said to overtake quinoa and other ancient grains as the new substitute for gluten-free and protein-rich products. Voice of America's Faith Lapidus reports.
Americans were usually introduced to teff at Ethiopian restaurants, where it's the main ingredient in injera, the spongy flatbread used as an edible serving plate. But American consumers at the grocery store are interested in the grain's nutritional value. It's high in protein, vitamin C, calcium, and fiber, and it's gluten-free, making it an attractive alternative to wheat.
Well, the popularity has been increasing recently, mainly because it's gluten-free grain, and that's very popular at the moment. You're finding it more in its whole grain form, in its flour form, in tortillas and things like that. So people are cooking with it a lot more. It's being more utilized in baking and things like that.
Nutritionist Alyssa Goodman says there's a good reason for that.
I think that all of us are a little tired of quinoa. We have had quinoa in everything, so I think we're ready for a change. And teff is a gluten-free grain. It's been around for a very, very long time. And I have to tell you, there are a lot of benefits compared to its counterparts of gluten-free grains that excel.
Sales of traditional grains have risen in the United States, with teff sales up 58% in 2014, according to a market research report, and the National Restaurant Association called ancient grains a top food trend for 2017, all of which is good news for this tiny, powerful upstart in the American diet. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Again, thank you for joining us, and today we will talk about nutrition. Now, Tambra, you heard the report about teff that is really gaining momentum in America. And teff is originally from Ethiopia, as we know it. So what can you tell us? What is your reaction to this story where people are getting interested in teff?
Well, number one, it's about time. I mean, for a long time, African foods were seen as the hunger foods or the forbidden foods. And now we know unequivocally that it's a healthier diet. And so on my time traveling to Addis Ababa and having an opportunity to have homemade injera made for me and watching the process, it makes a tremendous difference. Number one, it coming from the country and how it's prepared here. And as I was sharing that, you know, the 3-day process in which you allow it to sit and ferment, it makes for good, healthy bacteria. And when we think about, you know, the new thing in nutrition is like looking at the microflora of your gut, and that's the new biome that everyone wants to explore as if we're going outer space to a new frontier. and so things like injera and how it's made, the fermentation like Bankwe in Ghana and other places are really important. That I always say is not just the product, it's the process and the preparation. Mm-hmm. That makes a tremendous difference in adding additional health benefit to the food.
So fermentation, you know, it's funny because some people would think that fermentation is something bad, right? But tell
Not
us a
at all.
little more about it, because that's something that I'm always intrigued with. Can you tell us a little more about why fermentation is good? Because it's true that in a lot of African food, like, there is fermentation involved, even in where I'm from.
Right. And even when we think about kimchi or sauerkraut, I mean, there are so many different foods in other cultures that involve the fermentation process. And it's something that may, if you think about how we've shifted our diet over time, along with society and economy, we tend to get away from these things, things that were really staple items as way as preserving foods, keeping it over the winter times, but they have come to be very important for our health. And so the fermentation process, to me, is another form of cooking foods without actually cooking them on a stove. But they are very important when we think about balancing pH in terms of acid versus alkaline, that we tend to find foods that are in urban environments, such as, you know, a lot of fast foods, are going to be high in acid. And so eating foods that are alkaline, where it's kind of like a balanced pH, to me, that's why, you know, the fermentation process is really important for our gut microflora.
Interesting. So then when something tastes, because for, personally, when I eat injera, I find it to taste a little bit, it tastes a bit acidic.
Yes.
But you say
like sourdough.
Sour, yeah. So when something is sour, does it mean that it's acidic necessarily?
Yeah, you can't always judge like a book by its cover. And the same thing happens, lemon gets a bad rap. People say it's very acidic, but the body metabolizes it into being an alkaline, you know, product. And so understanding nutrition is why we need to increase the level of education about our foods on the continent. We need to offer cooking classes and nutrition in not only academic settings, but in the community for people to realize the value of what they have, you know, right at their fingertips.
Absolutely. And it's a good point because, as I was mentioning earlier, this increase in non-communicable diseases, you know, and there are many reasons, including the way people eat, and urbanization has been cited as one of the reasons. So how is nutrition being impacted by urbanization in Africa in particular?
Well, when we think about urbanization, it's not that much different than any other part of the world. When we find urbanization in terms of any product that's being processed or packaged, that we tend to find that it's going to be more refined and stripped away from some key micronutrients. And so just in the States, we have a micronutrient deficiency, meaning that we have a high supply of protein, fats, and carbohydrates that are linked to diabetes, heart disease, and kidney disease. But then we have a low amount of micronutrients, meaning like vitamin and minerals that may be linked to our hair, our skin, our eyesight, those kinds of things. And so urbanization introduces more sugar, fat, and flour products that have been refined. And so those are going to be linked to really the top two NCDs that are going to overcome AIDS, TB, and malaria combined, which is heart disease and diabetes. And so that becomes really important of how do we ensure that we're still building a good local food economy in our countries without it jeopardizing our health. And I think that's a very important piece that we can learn from the Western world about where things have gone wrong in minority and immigrant communities. Have we been able to even see a report came out of New York that immigrants from Africa and Caribbean had better health than African Americans when you look at the traditions that they brought with them. But once they start adapting the Western lifestyle, in terms of not getting enough rest, eating on the go, not eating the proper traditional foods or having access to them, then we start seeing health deteriorating over time into the next generation. And so that's why focusing on young people, how can we spark food entrepreneurship, culinary tourism, on the continent becomes really important. We've seen that already pop up in Addis and Accra and other parts, and more of that needs to happen because it is a battle of David and Goliath that's happening right now when we talk about food. And the urban food market doesn't have to have the narrative that's currently being written. We can rewrite the story, the narrative about African foods, and we can own that and lead it. And that's where Wanda comes into play of how do we harness the potential of women and girls to see themselves as advocates, as entrepreneurs, as leaders in changing the narrative of our foods on the continent and across the diaspora.
And we will talk more about Wanda's work, definitely. And I wanted to go a little more into what are some of the things that you say, in particular, the fact that when it comes to urbanization, you know, it's in some settings, and we were talking about it earlier with my colleague Vincent, where we were talking about in some places, people see, for example, fast food or going to the restaurant as I don't know, an indication of being well off or, status. Being middle class and, let's go to this fast food restaurant. So that's because you have money, you can afford it.
Exactly.
But yet you are your health is being impacted.
Most definitely.
Right? So the good thing that we have in our food traditionally is being seen as an indication of not enough, wealth or something.
Right.
And then we just replace that with something that is more detrimental to our health. I find it very disconcerting.
Yeah, the poor people's diet is the healthier diet.
That's a good
Most definitely. And I've seen this trend from my time studying in the Caribbean and in Dominican Republic to Jamaica to Johannesburg. What was so profound in Pretoria was that you can get fast food on the go 24/7 on the motorbike. We don't even have that here.
Now
we call that Uber Eats, but but the idea that you can get access to more unhealthy food 24/7 is one of those items that, yes, is more convenient. Yes, we're tying in technology, we're creating jobs, but again, you're going to have to balance that off with healthcare finance, and it takes up a big part of our GDP, and that will be no different than the continent as well. So just as much we want to create job opportunities in other sectors, healthcare would be another source of pain, which we already know we are already strained in not having enough healthcare workforce, not having enough care health technologies. And so this is going to be another dynamic of shifting from an infectious disease-based system to a non-communicable disease-based system, and are we prepared? Will this be more healthcare loans coming from large multinational institutions? And so all those things have to be factored into consideration of short-term paying for long-term gain. Like, ultimately, it will make an impact.
Oh, yes, indeed. And so now when we look at the way we cook traditionally, a lot of the food, not everywhere, but in many parts of Africa, food is being cooked like for a long time, very thoroughly, and some experts say in that process of cooking for a long time, some of the nutrition values of the food is lost. What do you say about that?
Well, I would say continue to drink the soup. But I will say that the boiling process, the steaming and the leaves, all these are going to be a much healthier options than what we see in the West, which is what I've called fried diet and laid to the side. If that's what you want to be, then eat the things that will create that dynamic. And so my litmus test is always asking the question, is the food going to heal me or kill me? And that's why even in the African restaurants that we have, even in the States, that, I go and I spend time because I'm interested in how can nutrition even play a role in the restaurant industry and making healthier options if you have a diabetes or heart disease or a gluten issue. Or can we create healthier kids' meals? Because we've not seen that. And so when people ask for, the fried fish versus the grilled fish, it speaks to how they think about their health. The grilled fish is going to take longer, but it's going to be better for you versus the fried one. So it really is about rethinking how we see time. are we so much in a rush to get to the grave or willing to take time to enjoy the journey?
I don't know many people who are rushing to get to the grave. That's a good question, though. All right, so we are going to continue our discussion after a break. We have to take a short break for the news, and we'll be right back with Tambra for more on nutrition. A urine test that can reveal how healthy your meals are has been developed by UK scientists. The test, detailed in the Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology, detects chemicals made as food is processed by the body. The urine samples are analyzed to determine the structure of the chemicals floating around in it using a technique called a proton nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy. This gives clues to both recent meals and long-term dietary habits. The research team believe it could be widely available within 2 years. International aid groups have begun helping Zimbabwe fight an outbreak of typhoid. Officials say the waterborne disease, which has struck more than 200 people in Harare, killing two, has been detected in other parts of Zimbabwe. The government has appealed for international assistance. The British charity Oxfam has responded, supplying water treatment chemicals to typhoid-affected areas and deploying volunteers to educate people on ways to avoid the disease. Zimbabwe has been hit hard by waterborne diseases before, most notably a cholera outbreak during the 2008-2009 rainy season that killed 4,000 people. And finally, scientists have discovered that a protein that plays a crucial role in healing broken bones is not fully functional in diabetics. By applying the protein directly to fractured bones, researchers showed they could improve the healing and strength of bones in diabetics. The researchers at Stanford University School of Medicine in California found that the protein called Hedgehog helped mend bones in diabetic mice by stimulating the activity of skeletal stem cells. Excessive inflammation, the researchers found, was weakening the hedgehog proteins in the diabetic mice. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news. Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are discussing nutrition, and joining us in the studio here in Washington, D.C. is Tambra Ray Stevenson, founder and CEO of Wanda. Tambra, very, very interesting discussion. I think nutrition is so critical, but a lot of times we tend to oversee some of the small details that can really make an impact, make it or break it, in terms of how well we eat and how well we keep ourselves. So now let's talk about Wanda, the organization that you founded, which is Women Advancing Nutrition, Dietetics, and Agriculture. Why was it important to create such an organization which aims to develop the next generation of women and girls as nutritionists and in agriculture?
Leaders in the food system.
Leaders in the food system. Okay. So tell us more about it.
Yeah. You know, as someone who wanted to make a difference in helping my own personal family's health, I thought, like many kids, I want to be a doctor. And I went through that process. And it really took college for me to have a classmate tell me about nutrition. I didn't even know it was a field, that it existed. I grew up in a very agricultural environment. My stepdad was from Ghana. We had a very diasporan household, get the goat, make the fufu, the whole nine, in Oklahoma. But for me, I didn't want to embrace any of that. You know, my heritage, being a woman, food, none of that, because I didn't see that image on TV. And I thought in many ways like an immigrant. I want to be in D.C. I want to be in the government and make impact. And so for me, WANDA became important of recognizing that everything within us is all that we need within our culture, within our food ways, within our feminine power, and how do we honor and recognize it and harness it to be a positive impact in our communities. And so for me, it was important that I have a narrative now as a mom and a nutritionist. What stories am I going to share with my daughter? I didn't see characters that reflected her and that would motivate her. So for me, WANDA became an opportunity to say that Ruby, with any other girl around the world, that you too can become a food hero, whether it's a nutritionist or you creating an awesome food venture in your community because of your challenge that you saw. We need to give you role models and create new narratives that honor you and that see you as something more than what we don't see the value in our regular food ways. And I think that's why we have this issue with urbanization. We have diminished the value in what we are and who we are. And we come from a legacy of strong food and for strong people. When you think about what it takes to grow millet in the Sahel, I mean, my God, it's powerful. Not too many other crops can grow in that kind of environment. And I think it's a testament and an example of what it means for me to honor my roots and to help create a new movement and a generation of women from farm to fork to lead. We know they're already there, but are they being recognized, acknowledged? Are they bringing hope and opportunity to Africa on a higher level? And so that's why it became important to develop not only this new book series, which is our version of Dora the Explorer for Africa meets Doc McStuffins for Nutrition, with this little girl flying through Africa, introducing the health and beauty of African foods, but seeing her in an empowerment role that even though her Nana has diabetes, that she can make a difference. And my Nana had diabetes, I didn't know what difference I could make. But now we have a new narrative to show what you can do.
So this is a book series. I mean, you talked about a book series. And where is it available? Is it already on the market? Or how do you...
So it's going to be released during Women's History Month. We had our anniversary launch event was last year. So for International Women's Day, we're going to launch the new Where's WANDA book series. We did a pre-book launch at the Library of Congress last year. And so now this is an opportunity there to have a public release. We went to Nigeria and tested the concept and read the book to children in Abuja and to Yola and in Kano. And it was very well received. They wanted her as a cartoon. Mm-hmm. And so bringing more awareness that in the midst of creating new African characters, she's made in Lagos, that it was really important to show that we need characters in the food space to talking about all sorts of issues from food waste to diabetes to agriculture. And we highlight real women and girls in our books, and we have it translated into the local language. So this first book is in English and in Hausa because we visit with a farmer, Mrs. Garba, who oversees a women's cooperative in agriculture in Kano. And we highlight and celebrate the foods of the North.
Nice. That's really nice. You have a motto, well, one quote that I saw on your website: when we empower women and girls, we nourish the world. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about that.
We know that women make up a big bulk of agriculture in Africa, but also poverty. And so when we invest in them, we uplift a whole nation, because they literally provide the first foods to the next generation. Mm-hmm. And so it became a nice way to sum up why it's so important to make this connection. I have had men who say, well, why not invest in men and our boys? And of course, we need to invest in everybody. But when we understand the role of a mother and what she means and how they go off to the market, they play a critical role. And there's enough data from World Bank and other institutions, UKAID, to back up why when you invest in women, it's like when you invest in nutrition, you get double-digit return.
Mm. Now, I know we talked earlier about TEF and the benefits of eating TEF. Let's talk about some of the food that we have that are so good for us, for our health, and why it's important to hold on to this treasure that we have on the continent instead of trying to be modern, quote unquote, or westernize and adapt new ways of eating. Now, you talked about teff, which is a grain. Is that accurate? It's a grain.
Cereal grain, yep.
Okay. Let's talk about other grains that we see on the continent that are very good and other types of food as well.
Yeah, so in for instance, in Nigeria, millet is one of Nigeria is one of the top producers of millet. You can find it in Kenya and Uganda and other places, but because of it being part of the Fulani people, you find that wherever they are, you'll find millet. So that's across the Sahel into Sudan, you'll find millet where they'll turn it into tuwo, which is similar to fufu. You eat it with kuka, which is basically baobab. And baobab you can find in at least 35 countries, different species of the tree that seem very sacred. And so being able to also look at our drinks is equally as important as our grains, since soft minerals is what we say in Niger, or soda, is displacing our local drinks. And so things like tiger nut and hibiscus, or it can be known as sobolo in Ghana, zobo in Nigeria, bisap in the Francophone countries, that is another natural traditional alternative that you can have, that you can flavor it up with like your gingers, your pineapples, and not the fine white sugar
I was
that
going
we
to say that
tend to
because that's one of the problems
use.
I'm having with bisap. I call it
Exactly.
bisap. I'm in
Yeah.
the Francophone country where I'm from. All the sugar, and I'm like, how is
It
this
doesn't
not
have to be
hurting
that
me,
way. Exactly. So when I make mine, I rely heavily upon ripe fruits, strawberries and pineapple, and then add the ginger spice into it because it's so important to have a variety in our palates and on our plates because again the diversity of the food, the color, the flavor profile all has its benefits just like making a symphony in your mouth. We want that demonstrated on your plate. And so anyone who's creative can appreciate that who wants to have this, monolithic bland meal? No one. Like just
One
eat a bowl of
color.
rice? No. No, we need color.
So we need colors. Let's talk about the colors. Tomatoes, green pepper.
Green pepper, we have even everything from the there's so many different foods. Everything from the coconut, the Ghana has in Nigeria has a coconut coast, and how you can literally hop to different parts of the continent and be able to make a whole new African bread basket. We know that 2017 is supposed to be trending with African foods. But the question is, who's going to take advantage of that? There's a lot of new pop-ups, supper clubs, food tourism happening, but more of that needs to have that ingenuity, that creative spirit of bringing African foods into that conversation.
And finally, before we wrap up, how do you see us shifting from this new idea of Western food to going back to our traditional, more traditional food? I mean, how do we do that? How do we
I
accomplish
mean,
that?
I think about it when, again, the creative sector, when we t there was a conference in Kenya last year talking about how do we make ag cool again. To me, Little Wanda is going to make ag cool again for kids. But when we think about the proliferation of African music on the scene, like Davido, Wizkid, Tiwa Savage, the list goes on, that them having entertainers be able to promote African foods, the beauty, just like they're promoting the music, finding a hybrid blend, how can you celebrate and find the best of the best and make it for the rest of us? I think that's when we'll see Africa, in terms of our food ways, be fully embraced by adding the cool factor. And so when we, I mean, Coca-Cola knows it. So I think it's really important to have those local food businesses using these star powers coming out of the continent, just as what my good friend who made the dress that Lupita wore. I think this is an opportunity that local fashion designers, the local food ways, the music, they all have to come together. Okay. And if it's trending, it will happen.
That's a very good idea, using the star power to raise awareness. Let's make African food cool again.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Tambra, for joining us.
Thank you.
We appreciate your time. And that was Tambra Ray Stevenson, founder and CEO of WANDA, Women Advancing Nutrition, Dietetics, and Agriculture. I'm your host, Lina Ormondo, in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi and engineer Robert Wagner. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall.